Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, you're listening to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Wherever you're listening to us, we hope you're enjoying our little foray into the world of guitars. And remember, if you want more, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can enjoy an extra half an hour episode every week. Anyway, do enjoy this week's episode. Ha ha! Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matthew Knight.
Oh, wait, that was what? A surprise.
Yeah, what? I'm mixing it up. Is that okay?
What's going on here?
Yeah, I'm just doing it in list of like how much I personally like a person. So Matthew Knight.
Hello.
And that's it, just the two of us this week on the
absolutely unbelievable, and the
wonderful enigmatic Mark Packham.
Summertime.
Absolutely. So Jay's on his way to the Americas for something he's work going to, related.
He's going to Palm Springs right now. He's flying there right now. And firstly, it's going to be something like 45 degrees.
Yes, he was sending screenshots of the weather app to us earlier.
For American listeners, that's a lot of Fahrenheits. And he's drinking beers and being on the Wi-Fi on the plane. So
yeah,
he's basically flown into the future.
Yes,
ouch, absolutely. 113 Fahrenheit.
I don't
that was
know
a hot
it was.
One.
It was 45,
that
wasn't it?
Hot.
That's
that
what he said,
sound
right?
Hot. Yeah, he said 45.
I mean, it's basically in the desert, Palm Springs. So, they put a nice name on there. So when you go, you're like, oh, you know, palm trees and springs. And actually, it's in the middle of mountains
and
really hot.
You're going to die there. Yeah, he'll probably, he's probably not.
It is actually
back.
Quite near to Death Valley, I think. So
if someone said, draw me a picture of someone not suited to be in 45 degree heat and sunshine, the person I would pick would be Jay Cross.
I mean, he does wear shorts, but he always wears his jacket, so, you know.
Oh, not even that, just more, you know, he's primed for burning.
He is, yeah.
He's a bare-skinned.
He's a 6'3", which means he's closer to the sun than any of us.
That's why
and
I don't burn.
He's very pasty, yeah.
My shortness has its advantages sometimes.
As it does. But, of course, it's Summer Nam is just around the corner.
That's not why he's there, is it? He's just going to a meeting, I think.
No, I mean, unless they're sending him out really early, because it's like in a month.
Oh, right. Are you going?
I am indeed going
to
somewhere.
Oh, yeah, there we go. We get a little on-the-show report from Matt Knight.
Down to Nash Vegas.
Nash Vegas. Are you looking forward to Summer Nam this year? I think actually this year, more than any other year, it sounds like it's going to be jam-packed if the press releases that we're not yet allowed to talk about are anything to go by.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I actually really like Summer Nam's a much smaller show. It's less noisy, which is always a good thing. And you can walk around it in like 2 hours, I would say.
Nice.
And
that's
you can
nice.
And you actually get a chance. Like last year, obviously Jay was there as well. We got a good chance to look at all the booths and kind of talk to people, and it not be like deafening. And you get to still get to see a lot of people that you know there, because lots of people still go to Summer Nam.
Hardly seems worth the flight length from this side of the pond for something that you can walk around in 2 hours.
Yeah, but I get to hang out with a lot of people that, you know, important people.
That's true.
You know, and that's why I'm there.
That's
true. Well, I'm also important.
I thought about going,
but
it's a good warm up show.
Yeah, you should have gone, Summoner. We can afford it.
Yeah, we can, but I just decided against it. There's more pressing things to do, and
I would say,
well, what have you got to do on a day to day that's more important than Summoner?
I am here. I am sat at my computer. I am letting the ideas, just sort of really. What do you call it when you have an idea?
Don't say flow, because
having them.
The idea of anything flowing while you're sat in front of your computer is horrendous to me.
Well,
I tell you what, a better show might be worth going to for you, Joe Branton, being in
Cats.
England. Yeah, Cats. I don't think Cats is on anymore. Although I did go and see School of Rock the other day on a different map.
I really like that Gibson have still got totally the monopoly on School of Rock. I was at a train station having a look at the old train station poster of School of Rock, and I was like, every guitar there is a Gibson or an Epiphone in the case of the bass. But I was like, yeah, good that Gibson have obviously got the monopoly on something that's supposed to be rock, because Fender seem to just buy out everything, every sort of ad space they can. So I was like, yeah, good, because Gibson are more rock.
That's the classic image, though, isn't it? Of Jack Black with the SG.
SG, of course.
Yeah, why would they not have Gibson stuff?
No, yeah.
On a similar note, I went to watch Avenue Q last week, and it was probably the worst thing I've ever seen.
Is that the one with the Muppets?
It's the one with the sort of puppet things, yeah. And I'll probably get a lot of heat for this online, because people really, really love that. In fact, when we saw it, it got a standing ovation. But I almost walked out after 5 minutes. Absolutely dreadful.
I mean, I wouldn't have thought it had been anything close to what you would have enjoyed anyway.
Well, it's like,
I mean, look at the poster. The poster screams, not Mark Packham's bag.
It is, right? It's supposed to be kind of like edgy. It's supposed to be like, oh, it's Muppets, but the whole thing is like they swear and they say MFR and stuff like that. That's fine, but it's been going since 2002 or something, and the jokes are still from 2002. So,
anyone seen this new Facebook?
Yeah, well, it almost is that. Like, yeah, setting things in 20 or whatever we are, 2019 now, it just doesn't really work.
That always dates something when people are like, yeah, I'll catch you on MySpace. And you're like, oh, this program is old.
Well, not spoiling anything, but one of the main characters is Gary Coleman. Who's that guy? That guy from the What You're Talking About Willis guy. And I think he's died in between them having him as a character in the show, and now I'm pretty sure he died in between those 2 points, and he's still in the show. So,
wow.
Well, there we go. Well, anyway, I was going to say, Joe, you really should go to Guitar Summit this year on that after that long tangent.
Which
that's
one's
actually,
Guitar Summit?
That's the one in Frankfurt, in
Frankfurt.
Germany.
I like
that's the kind of, I think that's the one that might be taking the crown slightly from Music Messe. Slightly smaller show, a little bit more personal, but lots of brands there. Kind of a Summer NAMM type vibe.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. It's been a while since I've done a show. Maybe I'll do that. Anyway, this week I was back in the studio, and I was putting together some guitar parts, and so I was in Brighton Electric, and listeners you won't know Brighton Electric, it's a massive studio in kind of a converted sort of mansion. I think it was previously the bus depot.
Yeah, it was
for
like
Brighton.
It's a really, really old building, but yeah, it was offices basically, and the back part was like the garage for buses. So it gives you an idea of how big it is.
Yeah, so it's this huge place. It's wonderful, and they've on the ground floor they've installed a bar, so you know it's perfect for me, and lots of great bands
never
practice
rehearse.
There. The Cure, Blood Red Shoes, Royal Blood. Anyone else with blood in their name. But yeah, it's obviously a wonderful studio, and it's got some absolutely cracking gear. It's brimful of really cool, really interesting gear. So it's wonderful to get to go and record there. They have a fantastic, absolutely massive Neve desk. So it's a really lovely space to get to use. But one of my favourite bits is when you're coming to lay down guitar tracks is to go and just, they have racks in all the corridors that lead to all the rooms. There are racks on the walls filled with amps. So you just go on a bit of a hunt and see what you can find, see what you want to try out. And I found something, a dusty old thing in a corner that didn't look like it had been used for a long, long time on the second floor, sort of right out in the corner, sort of by the kitchen. I found an Ampeg G212.
So is that, when you say two G212, is it 212 combo?
Yes.
Right.
It's a 212 combo that weighs an absolute ton. It was one of the heaviest things I've ever picked up. So it's silver face, the sort of silver face Ampeg series with the kind of the blue tint in the mesh. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Wait, and solid state as well, right?
That's what I've read. Yes.
Just a little bit of quick research. Late 70s, solid state.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, which I didn't realize it was solid state at the time, because it certainly has a heat up switch, and it also, it weighed, you know, more than the Earth. It was a real, real effort to move around. And it had reverb and tremolo built in as well, on separate controls. And it was so loud. It was so loud. And it was actually kind of difficult to break up. If anything, it sounded like exactly like a guitar version of an Ampeg SVT, you know, in the you had to, there was still clarity even when it was really, really loud, but it still had, I know, all these harmonics and overtones that just made it very heavy. So it was driven, but it was just very punchy is the only way I can describe it. But
I'm guessing that comes down from the fact that it was solid state.
Yes, I guess so. But its drive was kind of fuzzy. It was very much, we ended up using it for all the parts that we had intended to use a fuzz face for, because it was just so, I don't know, so big, but also quite boxy and very mid heavy and clarity and sort of a bit flumpy on the bottom end. But I for a guitar amp that gets mixed press, and certainly is rare, hard to come by the originals, because they reissued them, didn't they, five, six years ago. Do you remember those?
I was going to say, I think towards the end of my time at GAC, there was a bunch of new, you know, sort of reissue Ampegs coming through.
That's right. But I think they were called GA when they were.
Yeah, they were rather than G.
Yeah,
they definitely were. Just having a look now on the gear page, a lot of people are citing it as the loudest guitar amp they've ever heard.
This, and I would agree with this. It was outrageous. I think we actually ended up using like much more room mic on this than we would normally, just because it was such a
too loud for the microphone.
It was just such an intense amplifier, but for something that has. Certainly the reissues, if you look up any feedback on the reissues, and I don't know how much you guys tried them when they were at GAC, they really got a bit of mixed, like no one liked the new ones. I don't think they really were reissues. They weren't reissues. They were blackface Ampegs. They were made in China. They were cheaply put out so that Ampeg had a guitar arm of their amplifiers. I mean, I would have bought one because I thought it looked very cool, but and you know, it was a perfectly good clean platform. But I think generally speaking, people didn't like the GAs. But these old G 212s, outrageously good sounding amp.
Like you say, I mean, from what I've read, for just a quick, there doesn't seem to be a lot of information on it. But people have said solid state. But then, why would it have a standby switch?
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, I don't understand either. I don't know if the front panel was just directly ported off of what they had available on some of the bass gear or something like that. And so there was, I don't know, that doesn't seem to make sense. I want a listener, if you know, or if anyone out there knows why they have the additional switches on the Ampeg G212s, then let us know, because we don't know. But my goodness, it sounded fantastic. I spoke to Jimmy, the guy there who buys in all their gear, and he said he'd picked it up for £400. And I thought, £400 for the loudest, coolest looking old transistor amp I've ever seen is an incredibly good price.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
I wouldn't like to, you know, transport it to shows. That is absolutely not something I'd want to do.
Do you know what, just looking at those a few different Ampeg amps while you've been talking about that, do you remember the Ampeg, oh, I can't remember what they were called now, like the Bass Rocket combo or something like that? They were I really wish I could remember what they were called. They were like a single 12-inch bass combo that had the diamond covering on it, and had like it was like a vintage looking bass combo that they also did alongside like the regular, you know, SVT combos.
They did it as a 112 bass combo.
Yeah, so
well, that's, There's a 1964 Ampeg Rocket R12A.
That's the guitar combo, which though, isn't it?
6 feet. Yeah, that's the guitar one with two 6V6s and a trem.
Here we go. The B100R, the diamond blue bass is what they call it. So
it's a 100
watt combo. Sorry, with a 15-inch speaker, not a 12.
Yeah, I know the one.
They were so good, and they stayed in the Ampeg catalog for such a long time.
See, that was that whole series. That sorry, listener, I appreciate we're talking a lot about bass at the moment, but that whole B series of combos, they were like a mainstay of the affordable backline for venues. Do you think in a time before before Ashdown, because I think Ashdown kind of monopolized the venue backline thing now for bass players, but
kind of. I mean, I would also say Mark Bass have kind of taken some of that as well. Like, you often go to places.
Do you see them?
Definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
At
venues?
People get sold on the reliability, and for venues, that's ideal. So. What I would say, though, is the B series in general was like quite different. Like, so I used to have a B15, which was basically SVT-3. An SVT... Oh, no, it was probably like more like an SVT 350, but in a combo. And it was, whatever it was. It was actually like 150 watts, though, and with a 15-inch. And they did a few different versions of that. They did like a 210 version, I think a 112 version, and they looked very much like Ampeg stuff. And then always what stood out in the range were the B100R and the B200R, which are these two combos that look really vintage, like silver face with this, kind of blue and... whatever they call it, like a blue diamond checker Tolex. And there's, two versions, the B100R, which was all solid state, and then the B200R, which had a tube pre. I'm surprised that you don't see more of those about, because we sold a whole bunch of them to people that wanted something much more vintage. And you just don't really see people using them. I guess it's a bit weird, isn't it? 100 watt combo for bass. It's in that kind of weird no man's land.
Yeah, exactly. Not loud enough to use with a drummer, too loud to use at home.
Yeah, exactly that. But they did look really cool. And if you were in a band that had like a quiet drummer, maybe like someone, using like brushes or something, it would totally be loud enough. Just a little reminiscing on old Ampeg.
Old Ampeg. Anyway, speaking of the opposite of reminiscing, looking to the future. I was looking around at Plectrums.
This is some crazy future you're talking about.
So I was looking around for Plectrums. I was like, what weird Plectrums are there out there? And once again, listener, you might well be aware of these, but I certainly wasn't. Hufschmid.
I mean, guitars. The branding alone looks like some sort of like expensive, like custom car.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. So, Hufschmid, I can't remember where they're from.
I believe they are Czech.
Yes, that sounds right. Anyway, Hufschmid, since 1996, their Plectrum collection is outrageous. And I've shared a few with the guys already, but honestly, find their website. Their website is really easy. You don't have to remember the name Hufschmid, because their website is plectrum.ch. So yes, I guess Czech.
Some of these are absolutely bonkers.
They do,
I'm into weird picks, but...
this is outrageous.
Can I just say a quick thing?
Yeah.
13 mil.
13, yes, that is one of the sizes. Now, I quite like, they do the Huff Glow, which is a, it's a plectrum that glows in the same way as, what are those dots called?
Luminlay.
So it glows like that. They're $30, and yes, they can be up to sort of 4 or 5 centimeters thick.
So one of these, and the one that's caught my eye the most, is called. I was trying to find the width or the depth. Sorry, but it's not in here. But it's made of acrylic, and it's dubbed the Mega Anvil.
The Mega Anvil. Yes, what a fantastic plectrum. Available is the Mega Jazz Anvil or the Mega Anvil. You can get in a variety of colours. It is as thick as your thumb, and it is $30 a plectrum. They do a glass plectrum, which is also as thick as your thumb. They do one called the Purple Storm, which is limited edition, which looks like a rare jewel. And it's, if you had a pendant with a jewel that size, I imagine it would be worth a lot of money. The Natural Huftec is one of my favourites because it's rectangular. It's really square and chunky. It's like,
oh yeah.
It's like holding a small Rubik's cube that then goes to a point at the end. If you know, just for shape, it's a blooming cube.
I was just having a look at the pricing as well. So
$30. Yeah,
a lot of them are like $40. 40 euros.
Oh, sorry, it's in euros, isn't it? Yeah.
So the one that's made of polysulfone, the anvil shape that's made of polysulfone,
yes,
is 50 euros.
50.
For one piece.
That might be the most expensive one they do.
It is, definitely.
I do like the Dense du Midi, which is kind of like a... It looks like if an ice cube... If some water had frozen, as in that it's not like flat or perfect. It's all... It's very textured, very textured. It looks kind of half melted.
It's so weird. I sort of get the idea of a thicker pick because I use chicken picks and it's like 3.5. Yeah. But like 14?
Yeah, some of these are outrageous. The red Huftrun, for example, which is, you know, I don't know. It looks like the size of a coffee mug.
He said here that his plectrums are... thicker than normal. The idea is to minimize movement and increase the guitarist's hand strength. Less effort is required to play, which is a relief to the player. As a result, you have less cramping and tenseness, which is very useful for guitarists suffering from tendonitis or other muscular problems. I'm like, really? Because I'm like, holding a massive pick's got to be so awkward. I can't.
Well, I think it's more micro movements, aren't you? Because you're keeping your wrist and hand place. I've certainly seen this argument made for thicker plectrums before. Do you remember? Was it called like the Dragon Stone or something like that? I can't remember the name of it. Listener, you'll remember. It was something like that. But there was one that you hold with your entire hand. It sits in your palm, but it goes down to a tiny point.
I'm bad enough at guitar as it is, let alone having to like relearn with basically holding something the size of a fridge freezer that's chiseled to a point.
This one here, the red Huftron, which is 55 euros.
The red Huftron is the most ridiculous one there.
But the guy says it takes 2 hours to make one pick. I'm like, if you're adding margin to that, you're working for like $10 an hour.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not a lot for one pick. Mental. I'd kind of like to try one just for the insaneness of it.
I've already given them a shout, so maybe
we can get someone. The names, I think, are the best thing. Obviously, everything called Huftec, because that's just a hilarious word.
It's great,
but also,
isn't it?
The Imperial Shredder. Yes, the Imperial Purple Storm.
Oh, well, I read this one as Green Umwipe, but there's no I, so... It's like Green Umwip.
Toxic Shredder.
These are very, very ridiculous spectrums. The problem is, if we do manage to get hold of some of these to try out, none of us are like shredder players slightest.
Matt can do a good impression of one.
Oh, yeah, Matt, you can do a bit of sweeping, can't you?
As long as you hit the first and last note, you're fine.
I honestly don't know if I'd even be able to like play anything. Just looking at the 18 mil plectrum.
18 mil. I mean, that's... You know,
it looks like the sort of
six
thing...
Six times the size of the one that I play, and just like, what?
It kind of looks like a school eraser, like a
rubber.
Oh,
that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a rubber. Oh, God, love a rubber.
I want to try one of these, definitely.
Yes. We'll see if we can sort it out. Anyway, we should move on, do some mailbagging, do some news. But first, I wanted to quickly mention that we did release an additional podcast to the Guitar Nerds podcast this week. We had the first episode of Bar Chords, which I think the three of us named on a Patreon exclusive episode.
Yes, because it's you drinking. Week.
Yeah. So each week on Bar Chords, I'm going to drink my way through a half bottle of a different liqueur and talk about gear. I really enjoyed the first one, but I drank gin on the first one. I've been sent a bottle of blood orange vodka, so I'm going to be drinking that for the second episode. Those episodes are going to come out every Friday, so a couple of days for you to digest the regular podcast. But you know, I'm welcoming feedback on that one, as it's the first one I've done on my own. So, you know, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Head over there and let me know what you think, what I can change, how I can make it better. That would be great. Let's do some mailbag.
Mailbag.
So, first up and only up on the mailbag this week, we got sent that one of the new Yamaha Transacoustics.
Absolutely, so fantastic.
I keep making the mistake that we've seen this before, but this is the nylon string version, right?
No, it's not. No, this is the body, certainly, of this one. So, listener, the one we've been sent is the Transacoustic CSF-TA. It certainly does the finish of the wood on the front, that sort of orangey solid spruce, and the rosewood around the back and sides. Certainly give it the look of a classical guitar. But no, it's a parlor. It's just a parlor size.
I see. That makes a lot more sense.
Certainly does have that look, doesn't it? But no, it's a regular one. Now, we obviously, Transacoustic, we talked about these back in, what, I don't know, 2015 Gear of the Year? 2016 Gear of the Year? 16. Yeah.
Was it 16? Because we saw them at NAMM.
Yeah.
Joe,
you and me went and we tried them out, didn't we?
What, 2017?
Yes. No, 2018?
No, 2018 was the one. Yeah. Oh. No, 2019 was the one just gone. So, yeah,
2018. Yeah. So, yes, this is new. So they got hold of me and they said, hey, would you like to try one of these out? And they wanted to send me one of the other ones, which is kind of their flagship, but I knew we'd kind of tried these out before. So I asked if we could get this one because it's the brand new one for this year, their little parlor. And, of course, you know, I blooming love a parlor size guitar. I think they are very, very cool. But yeah, and you know, it made such a difference because I know we've tried them out before, but when we've tried them out, we've tried them either at GAC or Matt, you and me went and tried them out, you know, with a queue of other sort of, you know, YouTube-y people behind us waiting to have their go on it. So, you know, you don't really get to actually mess around with it properly. And when we did that, I was sort of doing the camera and sound, so I didn't get any proper time with it then.
I mean, I thought it was wicked. I mean, I was really, like, skeptical. I was like, yeah, no one
weren't
needs
we
this.
Weren't we all?
But actually, when you try it, you're like, it's the same thing with an electric guitar, and you have an amp with reverb, and then you're like, yeah, I should probably just go for, like, more of a straight-ahead sound. And you turn the reverb off, and you're like, man, guitar sounds rubbish.
So, Matt, explain the concept of transacoustic for the listener.
So, it's some sort of magic, but basically they have built some sort of, it's like a pickup or something.
It's mechanical. It's a mechanical. It's a moving part.
Yeah, it's like a
this.
Moving part that basically goes in. It's in the guitar. It's in the guitar, and basically works with the vibration of the top wood, I think, and then that somehow does something that generates acoustic reverb and chorus. I mean, yes. I don't really know the full ins and outs, but
that's it. I think that's as much as you need to know, is that it's a mechanical function of the acoustic, which then gives you two separate controls where you select the level of the control on a master, but then you have two rotaries, one for chorus and one for reverb on the top of the guitar. So you can add reverb and you can add chorus mechanically without any built-in pedals or any electronic parts.
Yeah, they basically say they call it an actuator is installed on the inner surface of the guitar back and vibrates in response to the vibration of the strings. These vibrations are then conveyed to the body of the guitar and to the air in and around the guitar body, generating authentic reverb and chorus sounds. And it is like magic.
Is there
bizarre.
A battery or anything?
There is a battery, but I think it's because the guitar is active.
Yeah, it's because the battery's for the preamp to plug it in, yeah.
Oh, okay, right. So it has got a pickup in there as well to plug
it in. There's a pickup, yeah, so you can plug it in.
Okay.
Yeah, which I actually haven't done yet. Now, I was actually going to do a couple of sound samples on the bar chords episode this week because I was going to talk about it a little bit more. But yeah, what a ridiculous guitar. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it played it lovely. I mean, you know, Yamaha make great acoustics anyway, so I thought it was rather good.
Yamaha make good everything, and we've talked about it on the podcast before, like how all their stuff kind of feels similar. It's kind of weird, like their drum kits kind of feel like their guitars, and it's really hard to put that into like how to quantify that. But
yeah,
they do. They just feel everything feels incredibly solid and well built, but never like overtly or overly flashy. They just feel like they're always going to work, like forever. Yeah.
Functional quality. That's kind of sort of Yamaha's mainstay.
The crazy thing is, what I love is that you can turn the transacoustic on or off. And it's one of those things that really the only reason the button's there is because when you turn it off, you realize how much better it makes everything sound when it's on. It was one of the most bizarre things ever.
Personally, not a big fan of chorus on acoustic. Like it's
no,
the
but
sort
the
of
reverb
thing.
Is
the reverb's fantastic. The only time you ever hear chorus on an acoustic, it's because I don't know, like Metallica are doing, you know, an acoustic version of one of their tracks or something. It's one of those like metal bands doing ballads. They use chorus on an acoustic. Outside of that, it's, you know, everyone else realizes that it sounds cheesy and naff. But the reverb on it, I think it sounds absolutely fantastic. One thing though, I've played the fingerstyle, and it, of course you get a lot more bass response acoustically playing fingerstyle, and the reverb is, I was maxing out the reverb to get it to a state where I could hear that it was impacting on the sound, whereas playing with a plectrum and it's, you know, it's all because that's where that reverb's carrying is on your high end. So, you know, great for strumming chords and great for pick players, I think.
So as far as I can kind of understand, what the actuator is actually doing is taking the vibrations from the strings, and then I assume what it's doing is in some way delaying them to different amounts to create chorus or reverb. And then it's kind of like playing though that back off the body of the guitar, if that makes sense.
Yes, using the soundboard in some way, isn't it?
Exactly that. So, yeah.
No, I don't understand what you're saying. There's a little guy with a tape recorder underneath.
Yeah.
Right.
But it would explain why, basically, the harder you hit the strings, the more pronounced the effect is, because I assume it's more able to respond to a, you know, more input, basically, is giving you more output. And if you're playing softly, fingerstyle, then I imagine the effect is not going to work quite as well. But I'd be really interested, because I've not even tried the original shape. I've never had a go on one.
There are loads now. I think 1, 2, 3. Yeah, 3 different body shapes, and then there are models within those body shapes.
Yeah, there's just looking on their site, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 models right now.
Right, yeah, great. I mean, it's definitely something they're running with. I like they're managing to keep the price down with these as well. Like this, the thing is, they're great acoustics just off the bat, like without any of that stuff. So, like for example, in the case of the Parlor that we've got, it's €764 for the instrument, which is, you know, that's a reasonable price for a premium quality guitar anyway, without all the inside stuff, but. Yeah, we'll see.
Some of the top ones as well have got the ARE treatment, so that kind of artificially aged woods.
I'm so into that.
Torrified woods, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the top ones, you know, they're not super cheap. They're like, the price here is showing around €1,100. But, you know, it's a Yamaha acoustic. It's going to last you forever, and the features they put packed in there are cool, and it's got the ARE treatment. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like just a great deal.
A very good guitar. I'm actually I was gonna go and play some open mics next week. I might take the transacoustic with me.
Sounds like an idea. Give it a road test.
Yeah, give it an actual road test.
Spills a pint over you and or bottles you off stage, which I can imagine might happen.
Yes, I mean that is quite likely considering the absolute dross that I will be playing.
Indeed. Look after the guitar. Save the guitar, not yourself.
I understand. Well, you guys will be there to support me. So
sure,
you can,
100%. Yeah. I'm definitely not on holiday next week, so absolutely. I'll definitely be there.
Cool, wonderful. That's good to know. Anyway, let's do some news.
News.
So, first up in the news, Matthew Knight.
Yes.
You're at it again. No wonder you've been so busy.
Yes.
I mean, you've barely been on a podcast for the last like 3 or 4 months, and we know why.
No. I've done the last few. Jay Cross. He's the man you should be cross with.
I really miss Jay. This is the second week.
Oh, thanks.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
No. I miss you when you're not on it as well.
I'm always here. Almost, except for next week when I'm not
here. You're not here next week. Yeah. I thought it was this week you weren't here. I had my hopes up.
No, unfortunately, I am here.
Yeah. Well. Matt.
Oh, well. Yes.
Boss have actually released some stuff.
Yeah, I've been, as you say, mega busy answering loads of questions and getting these ready for launch, and I'm super pleased to be able to talk about them. Finally, the 200 series, something that I think people have been after for a long time.
A whole new series of pedals.
A whole new series, yeah, in a whole new chassis as well.
So now there's Standard Line, Wazzacraft. Oh, is it X? Do you call them X?
Yeah, obviously we've got standard compacts, which is, I mean, in terms of form factor, compacts. And then within that, you've got your normal compacts. You've got Waza, which are the ones made in Japan. And then you've got the X series, which have the multi-dimensional processing technology. And then we've obviously got the 500 series, which are the bigger sort of all singing, all dancing sort of mega effects boxes. And then we sort of were missing this sort of bit in between, and we sort of realized there was a bit of a gap where you could get a small pedal that was maybe multifunctional but didn't have some things that you needed, like presets, or was totally stripped back, or you could get something way more advanced that, you know, potentially was too much for some people. So a big thing we got, and, you know, being perfectly honest from my point, was, you know, DD500 was going straight up against something like the Strymon Timeline. And while people were buying DD500 and enjoyed it, a lot of people said, well, actually, I went for the Strymon. And people were going, well, it was easier to use. It was easier to dial in. Not everyone wants to kind of deep dive into menus.
So certainly from my perspective at the time that I was shooting a lot of videos at GAK, if I needed something quickly, I was opting for the Strymon over the Boss One, just because they were slightly easier to use, you know, at a glance. But you know, that's obviously, so obviously I was aware that the Boss One was a higher quality product.
Yeah, so basically, for people who haven't seen it, we've released, we've announced four new pedals. So the DD200 digital delay, the EQ200 graphic equalizer, MD200 modulation, and the OD200 hybrid drive. So the MD and the OD are actually going to have a full release later on. So we're focusing on the delay and the EQ, which we've released the full specs on. So the EQ is actually, I think, going to be a massive secret weapon to some people.
That is a really interesting choice. Well, I loved it in the demo, but also what an odd one to do.
Well, the thing is, lots of people have still loved the old GE20, which was the 10-band EQ that we did way back. And then people out there like Source Audio make great equalizers, and then you've got people like MXR making analog 10-band EQs. And so we were like, right, how can we pump a load of features into something that would work for every situation? So you've basically got a 10-band EQ that's got two channels in it. So the reason you've got two channels is it's actually got two sets of 10-band EQs that you can then run in series or in parallel. But because it's stereo in and stereo out, you can run it in mono, dual mono, so you could run two EQs into two amps. You could run pre-post, so you could run an overdrive pedal in the loop, as it were, and then run an EQ before and after. Or you can run it in full stereo. Then we give you presets, so you can quickly change it. So if you're doing, even if you're doing levels with guitars, so we wanted it super easy to dial in and very visual on the readout, because what's different with most EQs is when you boost an EQ frequency, you're spiking that EQ frequency. What we've done is we've actually built in a much better crossover between frequencies, so you get a much smoother range of frequency across a broad range. And then that's visually represented on the screen. So super easy to use, very easy to dial in. But you can also do, you can get wacky with it, because you can actually plug an expression pedal in and then use it like a volume pedal.
Outrageous.
So you can actually use it to go from zero EQ, flat volume, to boosted EQ with a boosted volume. And it also goes, all of these will work with MIDI over TRS, which is quite a nice little feature, because MIDI only actually transmits over three of the five pins on a MIDI cable. So we could squeeze it down into a TRS cable, which is super nice as well. So you can link them all together with just a standard TRS cable. So that was really cool. But the DD200, we've sort of taken all of the best bits of the 500 and kind of condensed the user interface to make it really easy. So take, for example, things like the 32-bit 96K processor. So all the headroom, all the best sampling rate you could need for a really, like, you know, deep-sounding set of delays. But we've stripped back three pages of menus into six really easy-to-use controls, basically.
Right.
Things like a looper on there. So I was talking to someone about things like, we spoke about the Canyon, for example, loads of great sounds, or the Flashback, loads of great sounds, but you can only use one at a time. And you go to a gig and you're like, I just want access to like two or three really good settings quickly. And that's why we built in the manual / memories mode. So you can literally just go between four presets really, really easily.
That's a really great idea. It does feel like these pedals are sort of getting more and more taking the best bits out of, you know, things like the GT1000, like those multi effects pedal things, where you're going to be where that sort of memory mode is essential, and you're bringing up, like, you're having access to, say, you want to have five different delay sounds at the flick of a switch, where you can. This seems like a really smart move towards that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you can change presets over MIDI really easily, but you can also access a looper, which is really nice, and you can have the delay algorithm with the looper at the same time. So you don't sacrifice delay for a looper, for example.
Awesome. Expression pedal out on this one?
Yeah, expression pedal and expression pedal in plus control in. So you can have one or the other, so you can use an expression pedal, or you can use an extra 2-foot switches for some other controls like freeze, twist, warp, like all the things that we've done before.
That is very cool.
And we've added in, you know, nice things like Bintz Neckerec.
I was going to say, what, because it is digital, but like, what analog copies have we got going on?
So there's an analog delay. There's a tape echo, which is like an RE201. There's a Bintz Neckerec, which are the kind of main ones. But we've also built in the dimensional processing technology. So you've got Terra Echo, which I think is like one of the most unsung greatest ambient delays ever.
Such a good sound.
Because
it just does that. I could never find application for it other than like assigning it to an unlatched foot switch to like hit at the end of a song.
The good thing about it is it's really dynamic to your picking. So you can have like, but because we've added this really nice parameter control on, every delay has its own unique parameter and you can sort of adjust that. But the real amazing algorithm on this, the standout one for me that I've tried, is the pad echo, which is basically an echo with a built-in slow gear, effectively. So it does the auto swell-in delay, and you set the feedback up, the parameter like kind of really softens everything, and it was just one of the most
I'm into that
outrageous ambient delays I've ever tried. Like, as soon as I tried it, I was like, I'm definitely gonna buy one instantly on the pedal board. It's so good.
And I didn't read too much about these because I wanted to be sort of wowed by them on the podcast. The price, you've kept the price down.
249 euro RRP, so I think that's about £219.
That seems, it seems incredibly cheap when you consider there's a lot of kind of single delays out there that are well north of that.
Well, I think this is the thing, you know.
Well, you think an average delay pedal is 199. I'd say, like, that is your standard, you know, sort of not cheap major brand price for a good delay.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, you know, really, you know, and this is the brand in me coming out. This it feels like there's nothing in that. It sits in a like a trench all of its own because you've got great multi-delays, above it price wise, but they cost more money. And then you've got great lower pedals below it, but you don't have things like presets. Because I love
the presets,
I love,
is the thing. The presets is the selling point for this pedal.
Because the thing is, I love my old DD5 and I love my, you know, I love a DD7, just like I, you know, I like the Electro-Harmonix Canyon. But the problem is, I like just want to, I'm never going to go, like, even when I had a Timeline, never use more than three presets. Even when I had a Big Sky and you've got like all of these crazy sounds. And that's why, I mean, I love the 500s, but I'm just never going to use 50 presets. You know, and I just think being have quick access to four, you know, a couple of standard ones, an analog one and an ambient one, that's me done. And that's for a lot of people. A lot of people were complaining, oh, you know, well, I want more and more and more. And it's like, well, we make that. This is for the people that don't want all of that. You know, that want something above a compact, but not quite as much as a 500 or a Strymon. Or
I mean, I think
like that.
I think we're going to see an increase of 500 series delays on Reverb over the coming.
Well,
weeks.
This is the thing. I think, you know, some people have probably had that and they want to go, but I really think the long personal feeling. I think the EQ is going to be the one that's going to be great for a wider range of players. I think bass players, guitarists. Anything, because it's just such a cool thing to have, even as a studio tool.
Well, I just thought as the broad sort of scope of sounds that were being created using the EQ in the video that you put out, including like drive tones and stuff, I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, and because you could switch, you can't sweep from one set of EQ controls to another, but you can sweep from flat to a boosted EQ, so you could build in like faux wah, for example, by pushing mids and things like that as well. So I think you could get very, very creative with it pretty quickly.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Mark Packham,
hello there.
Gibson,
yes.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about the Gibson advert.
It's been quite
an
up and down week. Let's focus on the ups.
Yeah, that's what I would rather not use our time to bitch about what Gibson aren't doing, but talk about what they are doing.
Indeed. And one of the things they are doing is a brand new signature model for a man named Leroy Parnell, someone who I was not particularly familiar with. I don't listen to a lot of country music, as you might have guessed from the band sort of bands that I talk about. Leroy Parnell is a country guitar player who I think has got a kind of like... he's described as like soulful country, so I guess like he's more of a kind of Les Paul than a Telecaster man, and that's played out in the fact that Gibson are now giving him his second Les Paul signature
I didn't even know he had a first.
Indeed, yeah. So his first one was a 57 gold top, which I think had a couple tweaks. I think it has like a kind of like belly cut to it. Like there's only one.
Oh no.
There's only one image here, but they talk about how did they describe it? The contoured cutaway edge, which
it was a very strange Gibson, let's put it that way.
You can't have a belly contour on a Les Paul. That's ridiculous.
I'm kind of into it. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world because it doesn't affect the look on the front of it. That's always my thing. Is like I don't really care about the, you know, sculpted heel on the Access guitars or anything like that because you don't see it from the front. And if it makes it better for you personally to play it, I don't care because I can't see it. But anyway, so yeah, the first one was a 57 gold top. What they've done now is basically build him a signature on one of his other favorite guitars. He's got a 59 flame top to go along with his 57 gold top. But this is a 59 flame top with a twist when it comes to the signature model. So yeah, it seems like it's got a kind of belly cut to it as well. But the finish is particularly interesting. So it's called Abilene Sunset Fade. And what it is basically a really nice tobacco sunburst, but it fades. So it's the most kind of sunbursty near the neck joint, and then there's pretty much no sunburst at all when you get to the base of the guitar. So the
seems to be a common theme at the moment with this sort of burst, doesn't it?
Fades. Yeah. Well, finishes.
Gibson have obviously done it on their, you know, the high-powered series or whatever they were calling it. Now they started off on those.
What was that series called?
I can't remember. There's the traditional and yeah, it's high power, isn't it? HP.
HP.
Yeah.
Is it high power? High performance.
High performance, that's what I was thinking.
There we go.
Anyway, so yeah, the Gibson have been doing it for a while, and it, generally I haven't really liked it. You know, there's kind of like blue, green, and kind of pink. As much as I like pink guitars, I didn't really like that kind of pink fade. But with this, I'm actually kind of into it. It's pretty subtle. Like the fade isn't, you know, it goes from like super bright or super dark right at the top to kind of like almost nothing at the strap button. I think it's actually pretty neat. It's pretty understated. As well as that, there's 57 classics in there, 57 classic in the neck, and 57 classic plus in the bridge, and what they're calling the all-new vintage tone circuit. Not really much description on that apart from paper and oil capacitors, vintage taper pots, but it's something that Gibson seem to be shouting about. But yeah, I mean, all in all, I'm into it. The price, not so much, $7,500, but that's kind of what we've come to expect from Gibson's custom shop these days. So,
That's so much. And essentially with a... Oh, no, it doesn't have a tummy contour, but still.
No, no, this one does, I believe. It still does have that, yes.
So, right. it's an Eclipse.
Not an Eclipse. Oh, well, like an ESP, you mean?
I mean,
is kind of that.
God, it's a chunk of money, though, isn't it?
It is a lot. But also, at the same time, if you're a massive fan of Leroy Parnell and you like custom shop Gibsons, you've probably got the money to spend. Otherwise, you wouldn't be looking at this guitar. You'd be looking at a Les Paul Standard. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If you're going to go that far, you know, why not go all the way? But I'm into it. You know, it's a lot of the time, these kind of signature models, I think, look a little bit too different from like a standard model.
Yeah.
Or sometimes not different at all. And they just go, oh, this is the Joe Bonamassa Les Paul Standard. And it's like, what? That's just a Les Paul Standard. This actually, it retains elements of the things that are in the standard line, and also things that are kind of signature to Leroy Parnell. And I'm into it. Nice little mix of the two.
Yes, it is charming. Now, I was thinking we're coming up to the close of the podcast. We've got time for a few more bits of news. I was thinking because there has been released on the Christie's website a virtual tour of David Gilmour's guitar collection, which is
we should talk about it because I think
we are. But I was going to say,
in like 3 days.
Yeah,
and
I actually think we could have a little virtual tour of our own over on the Patreon episode, and maybe the three of us can walk around in the magical world of audio and have a look at some of our favorites over on the Patreon. So
I'm into it.
So we'll slide over neatly, and instead, Matt, talk to me about probably the world's best drive pedal.
Yes, I'm assuming you're talking about the Full Tone OCD, probably one of the most popular guitar drive pedals ever made.
Yeah.
I think the first one came out, I want to say like 1994 or 1995.
Imagine making a drive pedal using Comic Sans and surviving.
Yes, indeed. The most basic looking of, I guess, the original boutique, one of the original boutique bands, Full Tone, have announced a new limited edition OCD. So there's a couple of limited edition Finnish ones that have popped up recently, but this one is the OCD CS OCD GE, which is the germanium diode equipped version of the OCD.
What does that mean? What does a germanium diode mean for the sound?
I really wish I could give a very, very accurate scientific description, but right, I will definitely ruin myself by saying so.
It's going to make it sound more valvy.
It's effectively a different way of the signal clipping. So you get like diodes and, you know, op amps and all these different ways that basically the circuit can drive. Germanium being one of the older forms of circuit, because that's what the old fuzz faces were, but they're much more likely to have variation in them. But what they're saying is this one is two MOSFETs plus two germanium diodes and some circuit tweaks plus a new finish to give a wider dynamic feel with a little bit more of a tubey vibe to the drive.
Right.
But actually the original ones did actually have the two MOSFETs and a single germanium diode. So this one's designed to go back into the earlier versions because the OCD is actually on version 1.7, I believe.
Really?
Yes. I think it's either 1.7. OCD version 2, which we did talk about. I think there was all the way up to, 1.7, and then they went into V2.
Was the one in reverse colors? So it's black with.
I think they basically saying here in there is only ever been one version. Version 1 with slight variations, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, all the way to 0.7. And then they went in 2017. I knew that we hadn't. It was like mid 2017, so about a year and a half ago. 2 years ago now, I guess, they actually went into a full version 2 model because they made enough changes not to warrant it being a version 1.
Blimey.
So a lot of people have always said, oh, I prefer the version 4 over the version 5 and this, that and the other. And I guess for those people that really wanted to go back to the very early version, which is obviously the hardest ones to find, this is the one to go for. Very interested to try. Actually, very interested to get an OCD again in general. I haven't had one for a while, but it is a great sounding drive pedal.
Oh, they are. They're fantastic. Tim, the guitarist in my band, swears by them. Always has.
Yeah.
Really, really, really cracking pedal. In fact, the Michael Fuller, the owner of Full Tone, has said that he thinks this one, well, I guess he's going to, isn't he? This one's the ultimate OCD. I'm sure he'll say that about the next one as well. He probably said it about the last one. But nonetheless, they seem very happy with it. And you can get it in a lovely teal finish because it is quite a boring looking pedal normally.
It's still Comic Sans though.
White pedal, black writing, Comic Sans. Yeah, I mean,
and if this photo is correct, they've even added a little bit of kind of like 90s drop shadow to the font. So
I like it. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, fine. I mean, this is great. They've no overheads for like a designer or anything at that company. It's very, very smart. Very, yeah.
I said, they're like the original. One of the original boutique brands, if you will. I think then they were just doing whatever they could that didn't look like a Boss pedal or a Dunlop pedal or something. Yeah. You know, and I think it's got its own charm now that it's been out on the market. I think if you had that now, I think people would be a bit like, oh. But I think, you know, it's been around for so long, over 20 years, you know. It's a great pedal.
Oh, that's so long. We're so old.
We've been doing this a long time.
Speaking of old boys, Mark, talk to me about Dean guitars.
Okay, this is not what I thought you were going to ask me about. I thought we were going to talk about the Lace D3 pickups.
We can talk about them. I was just running out of time and I thought that Dean's guitars were more interesting than the Lace pickups.
No, everyone loves Lace pickups. Best pickups ever made.
The Lace pickup thing is interesting, but we should talk about it next week because you need to actually read through the whole story about why the pickups exist and stuff.
I do know the whole story.
Well, do that instead because these Deans, actually, we can talk about these next week.
Okay, fine. So Lace have released a new range, in fact, of pickups aimed at metal players. So I think there are three sets within the range. But I think what's rather nice about this story is that they've the new range is dedicated to Donny Lace III, who was the son of Don Lace Jr. And nephew of Jeff Lace. So there you go. All part of the Lace family. But, very sadly, Donny Lace III passed away in November of last year. So he was the special projects manager at Lace. So this whole range is in commemoration of him. And I think, I can't remember exactly... There is a percentage of the proceeds of this going towards a charity called Solace for Hope, who help families who have lost people through alcohol and drugs related issues.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say. It just says a portion of all proceeds going to Solace for Hope.
Yeah, but I think a wonderful thing for any organisation to do. Fantastic, and the range of the pickups also look absolutely fantastic for sort of for kind of metal players, and nice to see Lace kind of trying to make something that's not cool.
It's a Lace pickup that
completely
actually,
rooted in the 80s.
It's a Lace pickup that actually looks cool. I'm so into it.
Yeah, so the humbuckers all have they say Lace sensor, and then they have a little image of them, which is a based on a tattoo that Donnie Lace the Third had, which is of a it's of a D for Donnie, and inside the number 3, because he was of course the third in his line of Laces. And then that itself is in a flaming Molotov cocktail bottle.
Yeah, that's only on one of the models though.
That's right, because there are 3 in the range. The Sabretooth, the De Agitator, and the Designators.
No, Disintegrators.
Yeah.
Designators. They're just giving it, giving you a job, giving you
designated driver.
Yeah, exactly.
No, yes. That's is that what it is called?
The Disintegrator, yes.
No, it's definitely called the Designator.
Disintegrators.
Designator. No. It says on my press release. On my press release, it says Designator.
The Sabretooth, that's because you can't read. The Sabretooth features a Sabretooth tiger. The De-Agitators feature a Molotov cocktail. And the Disintegrators bear a ray gun, as in a disintegrating ray gun, like from Star Trek and that.
No, look.
I can't look. I'm talking to you. How can I look?
The press release, I'm copy-pasting what it says from the press release.
I don't care.
It says Designators.
I don't care. Well, they are called the Disintegrators. So right. I'm guessing it doesn't actually give you much detail here, but I'm guessing they're just different sound for each. Slightly different look. They've got kind of different little insignia thing on each of them.
Certainly, yes. But they do look very cool. And yes, as we say, nice to see Lace Sensor actually making some cool pickups. That is actually it. That's all the time that we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode. We're going to take a little look at Dave Gilmour's guitar collection in 3D. So join us for that, and
3D
maybe you can
audio.
Tour. You can tour with us and be there. It'll be like virtually being with us and walking around.
It'll be like virtually being with us in a virtual world.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. Anyway, join us on Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode. And $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out. Still in one breath by me. We've had a couple more as well, I should add.
Yeah, we've had the Patreon's going great guns this month.
I know, it's bigger than it's ever been.
People,
you know that?
Well, apparently
it's the
so.
Biggest it's ever been.
Not what
but
I've
unfortunately,
heard,
someone's given me a bogus name.
You can do that one first.
Well, I have to, but when people give me bogus names, I try and ignore the bogus name and just read the name from because they have to enter their details on Patreon anyway. So even if they've tried to give a bogus name, I'll just take their real name from their email address, because I know people are just trying to make me run out of breath. But this person, their email address it leaves me none the wiser as to their real name.
Good. I'm into
it. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to read out the name John Mayer slowly burning in a dancing room at the start of...
And if you want to make Joe read out a stupid sentence like that, $10 a month, patreon.com.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
John Mayer slowly burning in a dancing room. Zach Melton, Jim Walter, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric Pryor, Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Angden, Adam Royce Crisp, Jake Cutmore, Robert Cousins, Rob Groove, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Hamilton, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagle, Stephen Hench, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Steve Lee, M.J. Spaker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sermon, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loisis, Hans Arm, Scott Cohen, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bentley, Steve Markle, DJ Marcos, Michael McBurry, Carlos Matzo, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Thompson, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moog, Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Doe, Chances, Matthew Ginn, Shaw Arbor, Christopher Walsman, Chabotson.
Very good.
Brad.
Thanks.
It's getting harder and harder every week.
Yeah.
More and more people signing up for that sweet, sweet $10 tier.
I'm really looking forward to running out of breath so we can just go back to you know, reading them out.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
It's going to be good. Anyway, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. Can you tell that I've written it down? That's it for us for this week. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye. Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.